Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Father Daniel DePlantis, a Catholic priest, martial artist, and host of the Karate Priest podcast. Have you ever wondered what the church teaches about different topics? Are you a martial arts enthusiast or just someone who wants to learn more about martial arts? I'd like to invite you to join me and many guests on my podcast as we cover topics of faith, everyday living, and martial arts on the Karate Priest podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to season 4 of A Catholic's Perspective, the podcast all about being a young Catholic surviving in a secular world. I am so glad you guys are joining us today because we have a special guest. We have Lisa Jersky with us, and today we're going to be talking about NFP. She is a physical therapist, and she teaches NFP on the side a little bit. So welcome, Lisa. Hi.
Hi, Amber. Thanks so much for having me today.
Thank you so much for being here. Did you want to introduce yourself a little bit more to the listeners?
Sure. The thing that I always talk about, because I think that when people are learning anything about NFP, like, you know, who is this? How did this person get here? Because believe it or not, I did not grow up thinking that I wanted to teach women about cervical mucus for a living. That wasn't on my radar. So yes, I am a physical therapist. I'm a manual therapist. I live in Texas now, although I was in Chicago for most of my career up until very recently. And family relocated here, but I've been teaching NFP for about 14 years and really love it. It's just kind of a definitely a fun thing that I do and that I have a lot of passion for. So yeah, that's kind of that's very, very short version.
No, that's wonderful. And, you know, growing up, I knew a little bit about NFP here and there because when my mom was raising my sister and I, we really didn't know too much about it. There wasn't a lot of information out about it. But as more information started coming to light, we really embraced it. And so a lot of Catholics, I think, need to know more about it because I think there's a lot of misconceptions, but also I don't think enough people actually know what natural family planning is. So what are like, for those who might not be familiar with natural family planning, could you give like a brief explanation of what it is?
Sure. Okay. So natural family planning, or NFP, is what a lot of people have heard of, right? And it's the idea that you are learning how to understand your fertility based on natural signs, right? Mm-hmm. And on something that you can see that's just, you know, part of our nature. I think that a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions because they really don't know what it is. I think that people hear that and they think rhythm method, yes. Which by the way, it is a thing. However, it is a very outdated method, if you will, in the sense that there's been a lot of advances because the rhythm method originated back in like the 1930s. And at that time, it was a pretty significant advance in women's health because it was the first time that there was a recognized rhythm to a woman's cycle and ultimately then her fertility. I like and prefer the term fertility awareness-based method. And the modern fertility awareness-based methods, I think, are what most people need to know more about because they're based in the science of how a woman's body works. And so the difference there, I mean, a lot of people will use the terms interchangeably, and they really can be used interchangeably. But I like that term because fertility awareness-based methods, or FABMs, talk about the use of daily observations of a woman's physical signs or symptoms and or algorithms to basically identify her potential days of fertility. And it emphasizes an understanding of your fertility overall, but it can be also used to monitor your overall reproductive and gynecological health. And so it's that women's health focus that really drew me in and why I'm so passionate about it. Because the tagline that I will always use when I'm teaching about this is the fact that, you know, although we're talking about NFP, and especially when I'm teaching couples in pre-Cana, we're talking about natural family planning because it is something that I think is obviously a an appropriate temporal time to learn about this, but it's the women's health stuff that's so big. And, you know, for couples that are learning this, they have to realize that the modern fertility awareness-based methods are based in the science, right? Mm-hmm. Because ovaries are not Catholic. All right. And so this does not, they do not discriminate. and so it's really an understanding and learning how these apply from a women's health perspective and why that's so important to learn. And I'm not here to, I'm not here to take away anyone's birth control. That's not the idea here, but I don't think that there's enough understanding about your options, because women go to the doctor and, you know, for this reason, that reason, whatever it is, or just, you know, whatever they're doing for women's health checkups. And it seems like that is the answer to every problem that we go to the doctor for, right? Mm-hmm. Having cyclical headaches or irregular periods, painful periods, you know, PCOS or cysts, you know, chronic cysts on the ovaries, endometriosis, you know, pelvic pain, like all of that kind of stuff. And the universal answer, a majority of the time, is going to be birth control, you know, right. You're put on the pill. And it doesn't have to be that way. And so the problem is that women aren't being given all of their options, and they don't understand what their options are. And to be fair, the doctors that they're going to really don't understand it either, because they're not given this education in their training in medical school. It's not taught. And so I think that it's a really important thing to understand where their information comes from, so that we can just be aware of that and make sure that we're understanding our options. You can't make a good decision about what to do if you don't know what your options are. Right. And so when I think about the teaching that I do, one of the things that I do in addition to teaching, I am also a trained speaker for an organization called FACTS. And FACTS is the Fertility Appreciation Collaborative to Teach the Science. It's a group that was founded by Dr. Marguerite Duane, and she started this group over 10 years ago. And it was the mission of FACTS is to go out and educate other people in the medical community about the science of the modern methods, because she had that same realization where she got into residency in medical school and was like, and learned about the modern methods and was like, wait a minute, where did this information come from? Right. Why aren't we learning it? And so she took it and ran with it. And she started this group and has created, you know, a bunch of presentations and webinars that are geared to the medical professional to educate them about the methods for achieving pregnancy, for avoiding pregnancy, and for the women's health applications. You know, looking at a woman's charting and looking at her cycle as a fifth vital sign, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we get into that space and we start educating physicians at that level, it's really impactful, because then they can go out and they're getting that full picture so that they can offer all of the options to their patients and not just have a limited view of, well, birth control is the only thing I know how to do. The only thing I know how to offer, you know, so.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that we have more resources today, because, you know, when I was a kid, like I said, there was hardly anything, and there was hardly any real internet in my house, at least. And so it's great that nowadays, you know, younger generations have access to this, because I think this is really what's going to help. Because, I mean, I don't know if you remember during COVID, but I expected this huge baby boom to happen, and it didn't, you know, and I was just like, where are all the babies? Like, everyone was cooped up inside, like all these married couples, like, where's all the babies? And to your point with the birth control, I mean, it's just used as a band-aid so many times for all of these young girls, and they don't actually, it's almost like they walk into the office, they tell them their symptoms, and they're like, oh, birth control. And that's it. They don't even ask deeper questions. What's your diet? What's your lifestyle like? Are you drinking enough water? What's your stress levels? You know, does your family struggle with PCOS? I think a lot of times, I've heard so many times that these women have gone years with undiagnosed PCOS or other issues because they were just instantly put on birth control. And I think that's really devastating, because these women have been on birth control, which can affect your fertility when you get older and you try and get off of it. And a lot of these women never knew that there was another option.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing that breaks my heart, is that people just don't know. We don't know what we don't know. You know, that's kind of how I felt when I first learned about it. And because I'm even more so than you, I grew up I grew up Catholic. I went to parochial school. None of this information was ever presented. Like, I didn't know anything about it. For me, as a young adult woman, yeah, I mean, I had the same outlook that probably everyone did, that NFP was just the rhythm method, right? Doesn't work very well. This is why Catholics have large families. Like, all of the misconceptions that I think are just generally out there, that's what I had. And so I got lucky.
Exactly. No, I completely agree. And what is your own story of finding NFP? Why did you decide to?
I love my story. Only because I think that, I mean, it's what sparked everything for me, right? Like I said, I didn't know anything about it. I had been on birth control for over 10 years in my young adult years, because I had gone to the doctor when I was in college and was having issues with my cycle. And so, of course, first thing they do, put you on birth control. And that was what they did. And I informed consent. not so much. Not so much. But I can get into that a little bit later. We can talk about birth control a little bit later. I have very strong feelings on the subject. But yeah, I got put on it and left on it because that was all they knew how to do, right? And it, you know, it will address and treat things from a symptomatic perspective, but it doesn't treat the underlying cause, right? It's going to mask the symptoms. And so when you think about it as a Band-Aid approach, you know, it's, I think of it more as a blindfold approach. You're just kind of ignoring everything, right? And because birth control is the only medication out there that takes a normally functioning system and puts it into a state of dysfunction. Right. And then women, as a general rule, are not educated about the potential side effects. And they are not just profound, but there's so many potential side effects for birth control. And there is not enough informed consent being given out there for it. So anyway, I can get into that in a little bit. But when I went off birth control, I was on it for about 10 years. Then I went off of it because, quite honestly, it just didn't resonate with my life and my lifestyle. You know, in my 20s at that point, then I was like, my lifestyle was such that, you know, you were going to Whole Foods to buy those fruits and vegetables because it didn't have hormones and pesticides on it. Right. It didn't make sense to go home and put those hormones into my body voluntarily at a much higher level. Like, that just, it didn't resonate. So I'd gone off and I didn't know what I was doing. And then, and again, didn't know anything about NFP at the time. And then I was engaged to be married. We went through pre-Cana. It was never even brought up. My husband and I got married and we were just kind of flying by the seat of our pants because we really didn't know what we were doing. And then in that first year of marriage, my husband's cousin came to Chicago to visit and she was there for work and was staying at the hotel across the street from my clinic. And so we went out to lunch because, you know, it was happenstance, right? She's right there. She was from Texas and had been here and she was a Creighton model practitioner. And, you know, we were at lunch and we started talking about our cycles because, you know, that's what girls do when they go out to lunch. And she started telling me about this Creighton thing that she did and, you know, what it was and what you could see and what it was doing for her and what that all involved. And boy, by golly, by the end of lunch, my husband didn't know it, but we were going to learn how to use Creighton.
I love it.
And so we did. And I found the nearest practitioner and my practitioner lived in Mokena, Illinois, which for anyone who is not from Illinois, it's really far from Chicago. All right. I lived in the city. I was in downtown Chicago and, you know, I wasn't from there. I was originally from Southern California. So I moved there and I was very city centric. Like if it was more than 2 or 3 miles from me, it was far. I lived in Chicago. Why should I need to go anywhere for anything, right? But that was the closest place. So it felt like I was driving to Iowa every couple of weeks to meet with her. And we just had such a great time learning. And my husband loved it because he had had 8 years of Jesuit education and didn't learn anything about women's health or female anatomy, like any of the stuff. So he really found it enlightening and loved it. And boy, at the end of it, it was like, why isn't this more available? Why isn't this more accessible? Right. Again, we had gone through pre-Cana in Chicago and they didn't even talk about NFP. So maybe there was a flyer in the back of our folder that weekend. I don't know. But I was really glad that I had found it and really wanted to share it. After we had used it, I was like, you know what? This is something that more people need to have access to. So, you know, a handful of years later, I went through the process of becoming a practitioner, started teaching, and that was 14 years ago. So
That's fantastic. And you teach the Creighton method, correct?
Yes, exactly. And I think that, so people always ask me like, okay, well, what's the best method out there? And the answer to that is there is no best method, right? The best method is the one that works for the woman and for the couple, right? And it's something that might change over the course of a reproductive life. There's a lot of things that will go into that discernment process of what method to use, like what resonates with you, you know, what stage of life are you in, what factors are important to you, and you know, what do you want, what kinds of things do you want to observe? Is there an app for that? That's the one that always gets me. But yeah, that there is no one best method. Now, for me, my biased opinion is I think the Creighton model is the best method. If I thought something else was better, I would teach that. Right. But in all honesty, there is no best method. And when I talk about it, you know, I understand and know all the different modern methods. Creighton is the one that I've chosen to teach. So when people have other questions or have questions about other methods, I can definitely dialogue with people to help them discern. But it definitely is a personal choice. The biggest thing is that regardless of the method that's chosen, the biggest thing is to make sure that you learn from a trained instructor, regardless of which method you choose. Don't mix and match. Don't try to use a little bit of this, a little bit of that, because that is not going to be as effective, right? Each method has its rules, if you will, has its little, you know, the way that it works is slightly different. Now, the biology of how our bodies work is the same. So there's a lot of overlap between some of the different methods, but how they work and why they work. And then again, the guidelines for effective use are going to vary slightly. And you want to get a good foundation of education in any particular method and use the rules for that method. Because again, it's when people start to like cherry pick out of the other thing that you know, that affects the effectiveness rate, because the methods are extremely effective. But again, you're going to get the most effectiveness when you're learning from a trained instructor and using the guidelines for that particular method. And so you can't learn from an app. You can't learn from a book. You really need that interactive experience so that you're learning effectively and getting the most out of it, of whatever method you choose.
Right. And that's, I think, the most important thing, because everybody's bodies work the same way in a certain sense, but everybody's also different in their lifestyle. And maybe they have maybe they have PCOS, so they're going to be different from somebody else. So it is based on people. It's person to person. You teach the Creighton method. In fact, you taught me and my fiance about the Creighton method. That's how we found you. And so could you just give a rundown of kind of what it is as a Creighton method versus the other kind of methods?
Yeah. So one of the big differences with the Creighton model is we emphasize the one-on-one instruction, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll do the introductory session. I can do it individually, but I oftentimes will do it in a large group because it's an opportunity for sharing that information as efficiently as possible, right? And trying to get the word out there. And so I really enjoy those large group sessions that I do with couples who are getting ready to get married, because I think that that's an opportunity for just spreading the word. And I always start it with like, hey, you know what? This might not be right for you right now, but I think that it's important information for people to understand, because I think that overwhelmingly people come out of that session going, oh, well, that's not what I thought it was, right? And this is so different. I really enjoy hearing that. I get that feedback all the time. A month or two ago, I had a couple who had messaged me afterwards saying, "Oh, I'd love to learn this method. Like, let's get started." Because my fiance was on board, actually, because he was, and in bold capital letters, she said he was dreading this session, right? And I think that's fair. Again, it's a lot of, there's just so many misconceptions out there. And so I love doing the introductory session just because I love that mind shift that happens. It's like, oh, well, this isn't what I thought it was. And opening people's minds to that possibility, right? And to, to get them to consider something that they didn't think was going to be a thing or an option or something that they would ever want to do. And so that's what I love about doing it in that format. And when couples learn with the Creighton model, again, you know, you do the introductory session and that gives you enough information to discern whether or not this is right for you. It gives you enough to get started. And then with the Creighton model, I think that the difference for us with the Creighton model, again, is that one-on-one instruction. So after the introductory session, everything is done one-on-one with the couple or with the woman, because every woman is different. Every chart is different. I have worked with over 850 couples now over the course of the last 14 years. So I've done a lot of this. And, you know, in that pool of clients that I've worked with for the last 14 years, right, I can not tell you, for most women's charts who I'm working with and evaluating and helping to educate and teach them how to interpret their cycles, I don't get very many women who have quote unquote regular looking cycles. You know, when you look at a woman's chart, and a chart, by the way, when we talk about charting, charting is just the tracking of those physical observable objective signs. With the Creighton model is a mucus only method, meaning we teach women how to very objectively observe and then describe cervical mucus observations throughout the cycle. And when you're physically writing this stuff down, it's very simple, actually. Like it's not a difficult thing to do. It just takes a couple of seconds to observe for these signs, and then a minute or so to chart it or record it at the end of the day. So it is not time consuming or labor intensive, because if it was, I never would have done it. I'm very lazy. But once you learn how to do that, there's a lot of sophistication in that simplicity, in the sense that your chart becomes a picture, right? Mm-hmm. And that picture is worth 1,000 words. And I can't, that saying just is so true when you look at it this way, because I've had women who will get lazy and they won't put their stamps on their chart, for example, and they just have their observations, but it changes it entirely when you start putting the stamps on there with the description, because again, it becomes this image, this picture that you can start to ascertain a lot of things about a woman's health based on what that looks like. And then the reproducibility, because we look at cycles, you know, one on top of the other. So we're comparing cycle to cycle. You're not just tracking random information. It really helps make it a cohesive picture about what's going on. And it helps you or facilitates the identification of the different biomarkers that we're looking for that are signs of health and wellness. All right. And again, those biomarkers or patterns, right? Pattern recognition isn't going to be as easy to see if you're not physically charting.
Right.
So it's one thing to know how this works. It's another thing to then know how to interpret it and what to do about it. So for me, you know, the instruction with Creighton, when I work with couples, it's 8 follow-up sessions over the course of a year, right? That's how the Creighton model instruction process works, but it's very heavy on the front end, meaning I meet with couples 5 times in the first 3 months, and that's where most of the learning takes place, right? We're teaching them how to make observations, how to describe the biomarkers, how to chart, and then helping to get some reinforcement for that, making sure that they're learning what they need to be learning and that they're interpreting their chart correctly, that their observations are being done correctly, that they're then interpreting that and charting it correctly, and that they're interpreting their chart correctly from there, from a fertility-related perspective. And so when I'm working with couples that are getting married, you know, ideally it would be great if they could chart for at least 6 months before the wedding. But, you know, I have taught women and couples just a month before. It's not ideal because usually they've got one or two other things going on, but I've done it. And
crunch it's certainly time.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the thing about it though, is that I was telling them, like, look, I can teach you at any point, and I will be able to give you the instructions to be able to use this effectively out the gate from wherever you are and with however much information you have, but from a confidence perspective, right? Mm. For a couple to really have confidence in their use of the method, having a little bit more data and being able to see the reproducibility will help increase their confidence and give them a larger, I don't know, for lack of a better description, you know, window of opportunity, if you will, because right. They will have more confidence because the instructions and the guidelines for what they're going to be considering fertile versus infertile are going to change as their confidence goes up and as the charting gets more accurate, because I don't ever give couples instructions that I don't feel like they could handle. Meaning I'm not going to, you know, give them the advanced instructions, if you will, if I really feel like they're not making observations correctly, they're not charting correctly. Like it really is something that builds over time. And it depends on that couple's individual investment in the method. Like you put in the effort early on, and it's not that it's difficult, but it does take a little bit of time, a little bit of energy, a little bit of patience. And when you've done it for at least a few months beforehand, it really gives you that sense of confidence because you start to see the reproducibility. And let's be honest, life affects biology. And so you can start to see, you know, how is stress affecting your cycles? How is sleep? How is nutrition? Like all of the things that I love talking about with my clients and how their life and their lifestyle is going to potentially positively impact their health and fertility. And then what they're going to be able to see in that based on their charting patterns. So that's why I say, ideally, it would be great if we have at least 6 months, but there is no right or wrong time. You can have more, you can have less. But it really is, there is no bad time to learn.
Right. And I know it's so important for, I think, these couples to learn about this, not just for like, okay, we want a baby now versus a baby maybe later because of like financial issues or something like that, but also because I've known so many women who have gotten married and then found out they're infertile. And they realize that these, the NAPRO doctors, you know, these wonderful doctors actually had a solution to their infertility. Like most of the time, you know, it is reversible for the most part. And a lot of people don't understand that. And that's, I don't think NAPRO doctors get out there enough. And so I highly suggest if anyone's listening and they're struggling with fertility issues in their life, or maybe just cycle issues, to seek out a NAPRO doctor, because they can definitely help a lot. And so like I was saying, though, there's health benefits as well. And for charting your cycle, what are some of those health benefits?
Yes. So I think that that's the thing, like I said, that really drove me. I really wanted very passionately to be able to share this information, because that was the missing link. I think a lot of women have, I mean, women's health issues abound, right? And there's all this talk about women's health, but women's health has become equated with free access to birth control and abortion. And that's what women's health is thought of. When in reality, once IVF and the birth control pill and all this stuff came onto the scene 30, 40 years ago, like that's where all of the research dollars, that's where all of the emphasis on this idea of women's health went. That's where all the energy went. Mm-hmm. When in fact, there's so much more that we can be looking at and doing, not only from a diagnostic perspective, but then from a treatment perspective. So women's health things that can be managed with NAPRO technology, by the way. So you mentioned the NAPRO docs. NAPRO stands for natural procreative technology. Physicians who are trained in NAPRO are trained in how to read the Creighton model charts to help guide their diagnostics and treatment protocols. And they know how to interpret what a woman is bringing them when they bring their charts in. Okay. And so they can look at everything from PCOS, right? Polycystic ovaries, or women who have ovarian cysts. Women who have premenstrual syndrome, all right? It's a thing. It's a real diagnosable thing, all right? It's not just in your head. Dysmenorrhea, painful periods, women who have irregular periods, postpartum depression, infertility, endometriosis, all of the things that we think about as being cyclical, right? The headaches, I think I mentioned that earlier. Acne. That's always one of my favorites. Like women who come to me and they're getting ready to get married. They're like, oh, but I'm so worried about going off the pill because my skin is going to be so bad. I'm like, okay, well, you know, here's the problem, right? Anything with the skin is usually gut related, right? Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's acne or psoriasis or eczema, like all of this is usually gut related. And when you look at birth control is prescribed, and sometimes it will help from a symptomatic perspective, but it doesn't treat the underlying issue. And it can in fact make it worse, because birth control, one of the side effects is that it contributes to leaky gut. And that, yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, exactly. So you get the rebound effect then when you go off. And so it's really important to understand, again, underlying causes, you know, what are the reasons for this? And so when we look at women's health and all of the things that NAPRO docs are going to be working with, like it's important to look at your cycles and your cycle charting to help understand what's going on hormonally, because that's what comes out in a woman's charting, is that it's a really powerful indication of what's going on hormonally with a woman's cycle. And then they can use that information again to help guide the diagnostics and treatment protocols that are going on, because women who have, you know, irregular cycles or who have those hormonal imbalances, you can usually see that in the charting patterns. And whether it be just general information about the overall length of her cycle or about other symptoms that they're going on, it's not just, oh, am I having regular cycles, right? Having a monthly cycle doesn't mean that you're having normal, healthy cycles. And so you have to really understand more intimately the different biomarkers that you're looking at that are signs of health and wellness within the cycle, right? Because having a monthly cycle does not mean that you're having regular cycles, right? And that's the biggest misnomer, like especially with infertility, right? Couples that go to the doctor for infertility, they say, oh, just go have sex for a year, right? Mm-hmm. And that's their advice. And we know better, right? For a woman who is charting her cycles and for a couple that is using fertility-focused intercourse, they will get pregnant basically twice as fast. Like the statistics show that it takes the average couple, you know, about a year of unprotected sex to get pregnant. Whereas, you know, when you look at couples who are charting and using fertility-focused intercourse, 98% will get pregnant within the first 6 months. And usually it's within the first actually 2 to 3 months. You know, I have the statistic that I threw out there, like if you know what you're doing, you know, intercourse doesn't have to be random. Right. And so you get pregnant faster basically when you know what you're doing, which I know sounds kind of silly, but you understand your cycles a little bit better. And so it just allows you to time intercourse appropriately to either achieve or avoid pregnancy. Right. And you know, especially with infertility, I think that that's a really big thing because so many couples are having issues with infertility. I think the CDC estimates that 1 in 6 couples will experience infertility or subfertility. And personally, I think it might even be higher just because of, and I have very, based on everything that I've done over the last 14 years, I have very strong opinions on the subject about why that might be. Everything from nutrition and the prevalence of like massive amounts of medication to the fact that women are being put on birth control when they first start getting their cycles and then they're left on it until they want to get pregnant, right? And you know, again, it goes back to that idea of like, what are all the issues with birth control? Well, you know, not surprisingly and sadly, it can contribute to subfertility. And so these are the things that women aren't being told. And when, you know, you know better, you can do better. But again, this is where we come into the idea of informed consent. So the NAPRO docs that are doing all this great work with couples with infertility and subfertility are just amazing. And they are there to help women and to help guide them and to help get at all of the underlying causes of the subfertility. That's the difference. When you look at the NAPRO approach to treating infertility versus IVF, all right, mm-hmm. And coming from Chicago, like this was always my mantra. I'm like, if you're having issues with infertility, the docs, there's more IVF done in Chicago, I think, than anywhere else in the country. And that's what they know. That's all they know what to do. And so your doctor's going to send you to, you know, the infertility clinics there because that's the only thing they know how to do. But everybody that I've worked with who has gone there, like it's a really big struggle because they go there and they feel like a number, right? It's very much, it's very protocol driven for the most part. And about 50% of couples that go to the infertility clinics come out of it with a diagnosis of unexplained infertility, right? And so you're going there and as a woman, you know, there's something wrong. You're not getting pregnant, right? So we go to the doctor. What do we want? We want to know what the problem is. Fix the problem so we can get pregnant.
Right.
But if your diagnosis ends up being unexplained infertility, well, what are you doing then, right? It's like the whack-a-mole approach. You know, well, let's try this. Let's try that. And it's literally like they try things sequentially one at a time, but it's not very, very helpful, right?
Yeah.
NAPRO technology is a little bit different, right? When you go through the NAPRO technology approach at diagnosing infertility, right? Less than 2% of couples have a diagnosis of unexplained infertility. And oftentimes, again, it's multifactorial. There's more than one thing that might be an issue. There could be a male factor. There could be a hormonal factor. There could be an issue surrounding ovulation. There's so many different things that are going to be a potential issue. And when you're addressing all of the suboptimal factors, it just increases your chances for not just conceiving, but then also to be able to carry a healthy pregnancy to term. All right. And that's the really big difference. You know, the NAPRO technology approach at treating infertility is 2.8 times as successful as IVF over the long haul at helping women achieve pregnancy. But then again, the biggest thing there is carrying a healthy pregnancy to term.
Right. So because they're not always, they might get pregnant, but they're not always birthed. So right. There's a difference there.
Very big difference. Very big difference there.
And also, like NAFRO doctors, they can also help if you're struggling with miscarriages as well. I think that's another thing, because you can tell whether or not you'll miscarry based off your cycle.
Correct. It basically, if you're charting your cycles, there are specific biomarkers that would be a potential indication that you'd be at risk for miscarriage. And there's things that you can do if you know that based on your cycle patterns. That's one of the things that I teach, right? If you know that, you can be proactive, right? Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that I love about NAPRO is the physicians are willing to work with women before they get to that point. You know, your doctor's not going to look at you funny if you come in and say, hey, you know what, I've got this, this, and this going on, and we are thinking about trying to conceive. They can do things proactively to optimize your cycles, to make sure that you're having healthy cycles. So for women who are charting their cycles, that's the big thing here. Not just am I having regular cycles, but am I having healthy cycles? What does a healthy cycle even look like? How do I interpret my own cycles? And are there any potential issues that I need to be aware of before trying to get pregnant, right? Because when you know better, you can do better. And if you have those biomarkers in your charting, then yes, there's things that you can do before you even try to get pregnant to make sure that things are optimal and that you are going to be able to not just achieve pregnancy, but then carry that pregnancy to term. And if you know that there's issues, then they can help support you and make sure that things are going the way that they're supposed to during pregnancy so that they can intervene if and when necessary. And that's the difference, right? And I think that that's one of the biggest differences is that truly pro-life stance. You don't have to wait until you've miscarried multiple times before someone says, huh, maybe we should look at this.
Yeah. I also love that the NAFRO doctors, they look at both mother and child, not just like they view them as both lives worth saving, you sure. know, not just like, oh, you know, something goes wrong. Well, you have to get an abortion now because of it. It's like, no, like they will do their best to try and keep you and baby as healthy and alive as possible. And I think the most common thing is usually low progesterone in women. That usually is what causes a lot of miscarriages because the progesterone helps keep the baby I don't exactly know, but
okay. I can tell you. So what progesterone does, when you think about what his name is, progesterone means progestation, right? It's a pregnancy hormone. It's something that naturally cycles, and it's basically a drop in progesterone is what triggers a woman's menstrual cycle, right? Mm. And so basically in pregnancy, progesterone levels rise, and progesterone basically helps to, it stimulates the uterine lining to help support new life, and progesterone levels go up in pregnancy. When progesterone levels drop, okay, that's going to trigger later in pregnancy. That's what triggers, you know, contractions and, you know, labor and delivery, right? If it happens later in pregnancy, it could lead to preterm labor if the baby is not reached full gestation. But earlier in pregnancy, that's what leads to miscarriage. Right. Wow. And this is actually how the birth control pill can act as an abortifacient, right? Mm-hmm. Because birth control doesn't always stop ovulation from happening. It has multiple ways of, quote unquote, preventing pregnancy. So in some ways, sometimes it can stop ovulation from occurring, but not always. Birth control will thicken cervical mucus to prevent sperm from being able to get up to the fallopian tube where fertilization to take place. So it can prevent fertilization in that capacity. But when that all fails, right, and conception still takes place, what happens is that when you stop taking birth control, it will trigger a menstrual period, right? Basically, you withdraw the hormonal support to the uterine lining and the lining of the uterus begins to slough off. And if pregnancy has occurred and implantation hasn't really taken hold and the pregnancy hormone hasn't started to rise from that, that withdrawal of the hormonal support triggers a period or triggers the shedding of the lining of the uterus, and it takes that nuddle life right along with it. And so that is how we talk, if you've ever heard that the birth control pill can act as an abortifacient, that's why. It's because it doesn't prevent conception, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the biggest things that a lot of people don't really know or understand. And it's heartbreaking, right? Because that's when life begins. Life begins at conception.
It's so true. And it's so sad to know that there's so many women that don't know about this.
Right.
That's the main thing. And speaking of misconceptions, what do you think are like the most common misconceptions about NFP that you hear as you've been teaching this for 14 years?
All right. That's So misconceptions about NFP. All right. Well, first of all, I think the biggest misconception surrounds efficacy, right? Because I certainly don't blame people. Like if all you ever heard was that NFP doesn't work, right? And you look at some of the effectiveness rates or failure rates. Let's talk about failure rates. Let's talk about the idea that most people are going to use NFP to avoid pregnancy, right? Where they want to postpone pregnancy for a period of time, right? And I can appreciate this because as a very, very type A kind of personality, I would be the same way. If you told me that the failure rate of the method was 24%, right? Yeah. 1 in 4 chance that you're going to get pregnant when you don't want to. I'd be like, see you later. Thanks, but no thanks. Right. But that's not true. And the CDC reported that statistic up until very recently that it was the failure rate for NFP or for natural methods was 24%, which is completely and utterly false, by the way. That statistic was born from a retrospective study that was done where they basically called up a group of women and asked them two questions. They said, what method were you using and did you get pregnant? All right. So the first question, what method were you using? They took everything. Anyone that was using any form of NFP, rhythm method, anything that wasn't like a contraceptive to avoid pregnancy and put them all into one bucket.
Oh, no.
And over 80% of those respondents who are using any kind of a natural method were using a self-devised like version of the rhythm method, right? Calendar rhythm, which again is not a modern method, right? There was no standardization in the education or anything. And so basically it just lumped everybody that was using anything that could potentially be construed as NFP into the same bucket. And the different methods have different effectiveness rates because they all work a little bit differently. But especially when you look at this, like they weren't looking at the modern methods. They weren't looking at the science-based methods that are taught systematically and well. Right. So that was problem number one. And so if 80% of those people were using a self-described rhythm method, well, of course it's not going to work very well. And then the other question they asked was, did you get pregnant? Right? So yes or no, assuming that every pregnancy was unintended. And right. I see this in my own population. Like I get people who come to me and their initial intention is to avoid pregnancy. And then somewhere in that year-long process, they change their minds. Yeah. They get married and they change their minds, or they're just living their life and they change their minds. And this is just what happens. I think that we've become a culture where women are living their lives and they spend so much time, being worried that, oh my gosh, what if I get pregnant? And so they're worried about getting pregnant. Oh gosh, don't want to get pregnant. What if I get pregnant? And then a switch flips and they go from wanting to avoid pregnancy to wanting to be pregnant yesterday. And now they're worried that they can't get pregnant. And so that's just what happens. And so again, in that year, when you're looking at people changing their minds, again, it's that intention. There's intentionality and people do change their minds. So that study was really flawed for all of those reasons because not every pregnancy was unintended.
Right. Wow. Yeah. And it's so crazy to think that, the statistic was based off of such a loosey-goosey way of making a statistic. I mean, that's not even a statistic.
No, it's not. And when you look at the true statistics, right, the true statistics for effectiveness rates, I mean, with typical use, and again, typical use means you're taking into account human error. This isn't even perfect use. The perfect use numbers are phenomenal, right? But even with typical use, the Creighton model system is over 96% effective at avoiding pregnancy. The Billings ovulation method is over 90% effective. Symptothermal methods are 98% effective. Symptohormonal methods are 93%. And this is with typical use.
Wow.
When you compare that to other methods, so birth control, all right? The oral contraceptive pill, it's a behavioral method, right? Mm. Just like these, right? But with typical use, it's only 92% effective. But no one thinks you don't hear about all of the people that got pregnant while they were on the birth control pill. I happen to know a lot of people who have gotten pregnant using birth control, occupational hazard probably. But then the other one is barrier methods, condoms, right? Mm-hmm. Condoms, the typical use effectiveness rate for condoms is only 82%. So when you're looking at this, like the modern methods for fertility awareness are exceptionally effective if your intention is to postpone pregnancy. And I think that the biggest problem that I have is that people will look at this and they'll say, okay, well, we'll do this and we'll just use condoms on days of fertility, which by the way, is not fertility awareness in any way, shape or form. All right. Typically we'll use that for couples that are using fertility awareness or NFP, and then they want to use condoms on days of fertility. We will refer to that as a fertility awareness combined method because it is no longer fertility awareness. When you look at the effectiveness of fertility awareness methods, it is going to be based on couples that are abstaining from genital contact on days that are fertile, right? That's where the effectiveness lies, right? Because if you're having intercourse on days of fertility using a condom, it's not the fertility awareness method that failed, right? Mm-hmm. Condoms are only going to fail if they are used on a day of fertility.
Right.
If you're using condoms on days of infertility, well, this is why condom companies get away with, you know, all sorts of things in inflating their effectiveness rates because they include data throughout the entire cycle. But again, if you're wearing a condom on a day of infertility, it doesn't matter whether that condom was there or not. You weren't going to get pregnant.
Right.
So it's very important to recognize those differences and to understand the true effectiveness rates of some of these methods. Because again, if condoms have an 18% failure rate, that's pretty high. And Dr. Hilgers, who is the founder of the Creighton Model System, I remember hearing this, that he says that if couples were using condoms as their primary means of avoiding pregnancy, and if they didn't get pregnant within the first couple of years, there was probably a subfertility issue because of the failure rates involved with condoms. So anyway, just food for thought.
No, for sure. And I mean, people don't know this again. Like, that's the thing. And it's like, not like people are going to go out and Google this. They're just like, what is, because they, if they don't even know it, how are they supposed to Google it? So I'm so glad we're talking about this.
Well, just be careful. Googling this information is not always going to get you the information that you're looking for. I just for fun. I mean, just for fun, before I sat down with you, I Google searched, you know, side effects of birth control, for example.
Yeah.
And it was shocking what came up. And more shocking is what didn't come up, which was easy access to actual side effects for birth control. And so it's, again, you've got to just beware of the source of information.
For real. I mean, and also whenever I typed in like birth control information, the first thing that pops up is Planned Parenthood. Always. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so crazy to see. And some people consider NFP to be Catholic birth control. What would you say to people who say that?
Oh yeah, no, It is definitely not. When we look at this again, this is a shared method, right? It is not birth control in that sense because there is discernment that goes on and there is active choice. You have never done anything to alter your fertility. You are just making an educated choice and having that conversation together as a couple. And, you know, choosing abstinence on days of fertility is not hitting the easy button, by the way. It is not an easy thing to do. And I think that it's very, very different from couples who are actively contracepting in the sense that in those instances, you are doing something to interrupt the natural process instead of making a conscious choice and effectively denying yourself, right? And using self-control and doing something that isn't always easy. And when you think about it in those terms, like the birth control pill, for example, I think that that's a really easy one to talk about because it is very one-sided in the sense that it, you know, women are taking the birth control pill and then all of a sudden she becomes an object.
Who's
available at any time. And it's amazing to me how often when we talk about this in the context, especially when we're talking about it in pre-Cana, how many men actually come out of this going, oh gosh, I didn't know about all this with birth control. I had no idea how bad, like, I don't want my fiance on this. This is horrible. And they really want to participate in the conversation because they recognize they had no idea. But for women, we've been conditioned our entire lives to feel like this is our responsibility. Right. And then when you look at it, you look at the list of side effects and all the things that can happen. Like, that's not what's emphasized. It's, hey, you need to do this to make sure you don't get pregnant.
Right.
And that, you know, the side effects are literally brushed under the rug. I can tell you for sure with my experience being on it for over 10 years, never, not once did a physician have a conversation with me about what the potential side effects could be.
Right? So crazy.
And the biggest things are, and I think this is important because I think that you can hear a lot about the side effects and the big medical ones, right? So the risk for heart attacks, the risk for blood clots, the risks for some of the big, you know, strokes, like the things that are really big things. And you don't hear about the instances when that happens because, again, it doesn't make the news. So right. you're not gonna hear about that kind of stuff. But I mean, I know firsthand so many women who have had some major side effects, but people don't talk about it. And so I don't think that the true incidence of these, you know, more serious side effects are actually well known because they're not looking at it. They're not looking for it. And a lot of times it doesn't get reported. Right. But even some of the other things, right? So you go on birth control. Let's just say that you wanted to go on it strictly for contraceptive purposes, right? You didn't want to get pregnant. I think the overwhelming majority of women who go on it to avoid pregnancy early on don't want that to be a permanent thing. And they do want to get pregnant at some point in right. their life. But they're not told that potentially using birth control can negatively impact their fertility long-term. So when we talk about the modern fertility awareness-based methods, right, there's three things that women will monitor to be able to interpret their fertility. There's going to be temperature, basal body temperature. There's cervical fluid observations, and there's urinary hormones, all right? Now, of all the modern methods, cervical mucus is fairly ubiquitous, right, in almost all of the methods. And it's because it has the biggest implications from a women's health perspective and an indication of what's going on fertility-wise. But it also has the biggest implications with respect to women's health. And so the bottom line is, when you get to the end of my introductory session, you have a much better and stronger appreciation for the miracle that is cervical fluid, all right? Because it is an amazing substance that helps to facilitate things from getting pregnant and from a fertility perspective, but it also is a really important indicator for women's health once you know what you're looking for. So cervical fluid is really important, and it is a necessary factor for being able to get pregnant. Yep, gotta have good sperm, gotta have a good egg, but you also have to have good, healthy cervical fluid in order to get pregnant.
Right.
And taking birth control over long periods of time causes a downregulation in the cells of the cervix where cervical fluid is created. And so it decreases the number of cells that are there to create the cervical fluid. And so therefore, you know, you don't have as much cervical fluid if you're taking birth control long-term. And so when you go off birth control, we always talk about, hey, you know, you might not have as much cervical fluid. You might not see as much. And this can be a very big issue with trying to get pregnant. You have to have cervical fluid to get pregnant. And that doesn't come back. So you get this downregulation of the cells in the cervical crypts that produce cervical mucus, and that isn't going to come back. So that's one way that it can negatively impact your fertility long term. But the other big issue, and no one talks about this, and I think this is just horrific, all right? Birth control will affect your libido.
Oh, yeah.
So there's that face. Everyone, I say that, and people are just like,
question mark.
Right? Question mark. What do you mean? So, yeah, it decreases your libido. And again, it doesn't. So this is the horrible thing, right? So mm-hmm. go on birth control. So now you can have all the sex in the world that you want and not get pregnant, but you don't even want to have sex.
That's so crazy.
That's just sad. Like, it's just so sad. And so I think that it is really, really important for women to be given this education and be informed. Like, I am all about informed consent. And if you are given the laundry list of side effects and all of the potential things that could be an issue, and you're given information about alternatives, and then you decide that birth control is the right thing for you, hey, more power to you. But I think that that is what's not happening in today's day and age. Women are not being given true informed consent. Informed consent means here's the pros, here's the potential cons, here's the potential side effects, and here are alternatives.
Right.
And then you can make an educated choice. You can't make an educated choice about what to do when you don't know what your options are.
Yeah. I've heard so many horror stories from friends where it's like, you know, or in general, I guess, where it's a carcinogen, so it can cause cancer. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of other, or at least increase your risk of breast cancer or something like that. And then there's
a little bit. Yeah, no, it's yeah. It's pretty significant. They'll talk about the fact that, oh, it decreases the risk of cervical cancer. But when you look at the overall numbers, you know, it'll decrease your risk for a cancer that has a low incidence to begin with, but dramatically increases your risk for breast cancer. And the problem is that when you've been on birth control long-term and then you get the breast cancer as a result of that, not only are you getting breast cancer, but it's the real dangerous, you know, kind. So it's not the one that's easily treatable. And that's, again, these are things that people are not being told.
There's the other one where like people will get into these relationship with these men and then they get off birth control and then divorce happens because they're no longer attracted to their significant other.
Oh, I know. It's kind of crazy. Yeah, that idea that birth control affects, yeah, who you're attracted to and who you find, you know, who finds you attractive. Like it affects things both ways because it affects your hormones, affects your pheromones. There was actually a study. This is so not a Catholic study that was done where there was a group of strippers and they were put into categories. One group of strippers was on birth control and one was not. And they looked at the tips that they earned. And guess what? The strippers who were not on birth control had higher tips around ovulation.
That was crazy.
Like, again, it is just, again, so not a Catholic study, obviously. Yeah, but it's just interesting. These anecdotal things that come out, it's like, oh, you know, birth control is very dangerous for a lot of reasons. And it affects our biology. It's affecting the biology of aquatic life. It's in our water supply now. Like it is affecting things and not in a good way whether or not you're on birth control. Unfortunately, a lot of us are on it just because we're drinking the water. But it is having a really negative impact on women's health. And yes, to your point on relationships for that reason, because of the effects of hormones on our basic physiology. Like who are we going to be attracted to?
Right. And that's so, so difficult. And I guess getting to the last point we have today is like, what should women do if they want to get off birth control, but are afraid of how their body will react? I know you've put some women through that.
Oh like, my gosh. Well, aside from, you know, again, going off birth control myself after being on it for 10 years, I have worked with so many women who have that fear, right? And it's a true fear because you don't know any different. You don't know what you don't know. I'd say the two things are making sure that you have some support, right? Mm-hmm. Not just even, I mean, support from your significant other, from your spouse, but medical support and potentially the support of either a fertility care or NFP educator who can really help guide you to understand what's going on. As I know from a Creighton perspective, I can help women navigate that time with confidence from a family planning perspective, all right? Because just going off birth control doesn't mean that things are going to be wonky, but it also doesn't mean that things are just going to go back into a regular rhythm. So you need to be able to understand and interpret what's going on as your body is coming back to equilibrium. And then understanding, okay, well, here's all the reasons why I went on birth control. All right, well, let's be proactive about that. Let's talk about all of the potential underlying causes for those things. And let's get you hooked up with the proper medical professionals to be able to address that. That's one of the things that I love doing, though, just because I have a very, very strong passion for holistic medicine in general, and for functional medicine and for gut health and all of those things that are a perfect marriage for NAPRO, quite honestly, because NAPRO is going to look at hormones and the blood work and the testing, like all the medical stuff. And then I love looking at all of the lifestyle factors and all of the things that are going to support a woman's health and ultimately then her fertility to make sure that she's as healthy as she can be. Because regardless of your fertility related intentions, right, your monthly cycle is a barometer of your health. Mm-hmm. And that's what women have lost out on in the last 34 years being put on birth control for everything is that we don't know what it is that we're looking for. We don't know how to interpret what our bodies are telling us and then how to respond, right? How do we respond proactively to make sure that we're having healthy cycles. And so having the support of someone like me or from a physician who's trained in these methods, because again, unfortunately, this isn't taught in medical school. So you can't just go to your regular doctor and be like, I want to go off birth control and expect that you're going to get the kind of help that you need. Yeah. Because most of the time they're going to raise a hairy eyebrow and say, are you really sure you want to do that?
Exactly.
Or they'll offer them an IUD.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is like not great either.
Nope. Mm-mm. Most oftentimes it's hormonal as well. Mm-hmm. But I mean, yeah, that's topic for another day as well, because it also has a whole host of side effects and potential issues. And I mean, yeah.
It's insane how many options there are and how bad they are for women's health.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing about women's health with respect to those options. Right. unless you're looking at it from a perspective of, well, getting pregnant is clearly the worst thing that could ever happen to you. Therefore, we need to increase your risk for all these other things to prevent you from getting pregnant, right?
Right.
And not recognizing that, you know, A, there are other ways to avoid getting pregnancy, to avoid getting pregnant. And, you know, getting pregnant is not the end of the world. If that's your intention to avoid pregnancy, there are very effective ways to do that if that's your intention, but you know, at what cost?
Right. Exactly. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Lisa, for coming on and teaching us. I feel like I've learned so much. I know we had the introductory course with you, but like, I always feel like I learned something too, because I think, everybody should take an introductory course to NFP, even if they're single, honestly, like, please.
Absolutely.
Couples, like, do it for yourself. And so where can my listeners find you, or do you have any resources that they can use?
Oh, absolutely. So biggest resources, I mean, if they want to find me, you know, I have a website. I am not present on social media in any capacity. I mean, technically, I think I have an Instagram account and all that kind of stuff. I'm not good at social media, but I do have a website and people can find my introductory sessions and, you know, be able to contact me directly. My website, they can either go to pokeandprodpt.com or fertilitycarecenterofchicago.com. It takes you to the same landing page. And then you can, you know, if you have back pain, then click on the physical therapy side. If you have fertility related questions, click on the other side. And then the other resource that I think is really helpful, again, is that FACTS organization. So if you go to factsaboutfertility.org, you can find all the information about the wonderful webinars that the FACTS group is doing. They have conferences that are available, and they're available for CMEs, for medical professionals. They have a wonderful medical elective for medical students. It's a 2-week medical elective where they learn about all the different modern methods and the women's health applications. I mean, it is such an amazing program and so many great resources there. Everything from, you know, helping to figure out, you know, what are some of the different apps that are out there, and be careful. I would say with respect to the apps, most of them actually are glorified algorithms. So you've got to be really careful. It's you know, they might even ask you for information like about cervical fluid or other stuff, but it's not using that information to interpret your fertility. So don't rely on an outside source to tell you about your fertility. Learn a method from a trained instructor. The apps are there to support you in your learning. But FACTS has a great article that did a summary of a lot of the different apps that are out there and about which ones are actually worth their weight, so to speak, and which ones are not as effective. And so, you know, be very careful because you are smarter than your smartphone. And so learning how to understand your cycles and how to interpret your fertility is really where it's at. And then any apps or anything that you're using to track your fertility is really just there to help, you know, be a recording device. But you should understand how your body works. It's right. Really, it's empowering to women of all ages, regardless of their fertility-related intentions.
Right. No, for sure. Wow. That's fantastic. Yeah. And I hope that, you know, everybody here is able to learn something, because I think this is super important. We need to get the word out more about this. So hopefully we can do that. And thank you so much again, Lisa, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Amber.
Of course. And with all of that being said, I hope you guys learned something, because I definitely did. And I'll talk to you guys in the next podcast. Bye, guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to A Catholic's Perspective with me, The Religious Hippie. Make sure to visit my official website at thereligioushippie.com, and while you're there, be sure to sign up for my newsletter to keep up to date with my latest news and offerings. You can also find me on virtually any social media site as The Religious Hippie. Thanks for listening!
A quest is a search for something. And every week, the Quest podcast will show you how we know what we know through interviews with people that have incredible stories of dedication and perseverance. I'm your host, Todd Fisher. Join me in this thought-provoking and inspiring podcast of discovery. Find us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please be sure to rate and review this episode. This podcast is produced by Amber Rose and distributed by Metacortex Publishing. This podcast is copyright by The Religious Hippie NFP. Any previously trademarked or copyright content is used by permission. Information and opinions stated in this podcast should not be construed as medical advice. Please be sure to visit the official website for The Religious Hippie at thereligioushippie.com or find me on social media for other unique content.